Talk given Friday, 25th July, 1975. Out of many people who are sincerely interested in the deeps of religion, there are only a few who really strike home and understand the real significances and implications of the profoundest truths. I am saying this because if we observe very carefully, we will notice that people flit from one thing to another in search of the fulfillment of heart's desire, in religious terms, of course, wanting to discover, to come across something which satisfies them. Obviously, or perhaps not so obviously, there is a serious error involved in this. I have my own conceptions of what will satisfy me. If I had the ability to penetrate into the real depths of what I mean by what satisfies me, I will find that I am merely the victim of my pleasure drive. I am expressing and living by the selfness in me. I want satisfaction. I want fulfillment, and so forth. In addition, there is the implication that my mind, in its present condition, knows what is the truly worthwhile. Is it possible at all for the person who hasn't realized unselfness and complete purity to formulate to himself, for himself intellectually, that which is the most worthwhile? Because if he could, then he'd be a remarkable person indeed in the world's history. Because it would imply that he can actually formulate transcendence itself in a manner which satisfies the limited intellect of any and every conditioned mind. You see how it is, how difficult it is. How we are hemmed in by, as the Buddha said, by our ignorance first and foremost. Our incapacity to be so sensitive and so free from the limitations of the conditioned state that we can really let transcendence touch us, and if we are the right sort of vessel, let transcendence function through us, and thereby demonstrate to our environment what is the meaning of a full-fledged human being. You will appreciate the extraordinary seriousness and earnestness which is called for. Earnestness of a sort which does not defeat its own ends. There are many people who are very earnest, not only in their own eyes, but in the eyes of the world too. But that earnestness, with exceptionally rare exceptions, is self-oriented. They are earnest about themselves, in fact. This is the great difficulty: to be liberated out of this prison house of selfness and self-orientation. Consider now for a few moments all this in relation to what we have so often talked of, namely total attentiveness. How many of us are capable of being totally attentive, even for a few moments? There are those occasions on which it seems as if we are totally attentive. But if you look carefully, each time such an event seems to take place, you will find that it is the subject matter or the external stimulus which has captivated your attention. In the manner in which, for example, a child gets completely absorbed in a new and attractive, perhaps a wonderful toy which has been given it, you will find it completely absorbed. Now, that kind of absorption is not total attentiveness. That is not a state in which one is utterly free of the bondage to selfness, of the isolative self-consciousness. In fact, that child is in a state in which it is quite isolated from its environment as a whole. It is completely captivated, absorbed, hypnotized by that toy. It is the same with us adults. We get captivated by the stimulus of the moment, whether the stimulus be a material stimulus which comes to us through the senses, or an intellectual stimulus, an idea. what we sometimes call an inspirational flash, and so on. We are caught up in it, absorbed by it. We are not free to give our total attention to it. That is not total attentiveness. We may inquire, what then are some of the signs which, by which we could know afterwards whether we were totally attentive or not? Because in the state of total attentiveness, you cannot be aware of these signs. You are attending totally. And therefore, the criteria of your personal attentiveness are absent in that attention. Get that? That's important. Now, when one is totally attentive, all thought processes which are the ordinary type of reactive thought processes which we experience throughout our lives are not present. There is no thinking. There is no cognizing in the ordinary way, in the ordinary sense. This is a bird, it's a sparrow, its special characteristics, all that is completely out in total attentiveness. You are unaware of the fact that you yourself, John Brown, are looking at a bird or listening to a bird. There is looking, there is listening, but it is of an order which utterly transcends what we experience and know and recognize as looking and listening. It is something utterly different. And yet the extraordinary thing is that in addition to that extraordinary difference, what we call looking and listening is also taking place at the same time, but we are conscious of it in this transcendent manner instead of the ordinary manner in which we are conscious because of the activity of a conditioned mind. The unconditioned mind is conscious in an utterly different way. It is indescribable. Perhaps a word or two can be said about it, which is vaguely suggestive of that transcendent reality, but no more. There are certain other signs also of total attentiveness. And remember, you recognize this after the event of total attentiveness. In total attentiveness, you are completely living completely wholly in the immediate moment, the immediate here now. In this immediate here now, there is no intrusion of the past in terms of memory. What does this imply? First and foremost, the very important fact that none of our ordinary mental constructs are present, exerting any sort of influence on the immediate perceiving, the immediate attending, the immediate awareness in transcendent terms. Nothing to interfere with it. Relate this to something we considered a few moments earlier. If I look at a bird, I see a bird, and I say, oh, that's a sparrow. What makes me say that's a sparrow? The simple fact that because of having seen a bird, a particular kind of bird which is called a sparrow, thousands of times from my infancy onwards, and having been taught that the name we give to that creature is a sparrow, the recognition due to my mental construct, my concept, rises up at once and says, oh, that's a bird. That bird is a sparrow. But you see, when I am conscious in that way as an adult of the sparrow, I have dismissed almost completely the immediate living perceiving of that actual creature as it is flying or singing right now. And therefore, I am conscious of it in second-hand terms. Therefore, this is not attention in the religious sense. Because when in every situation, in everything where I am conscious in second-hand terms, I am not in immediate living communion. I am separate from that of which I am conscious. This is the irreligious way of life for a human being. To be conscious in second-hand terms. So now you see, in total attentiveness, where you are, there is no separation between the sparrow and yourself in terms of attention, in terms of consciousness. There is no intrusion upon that living act of attention in the immediate now, no intrusion by memory, by past mental constructs or concepts of any sort. But you are alive, you are experiencing right now the whole reality, and you are experiencing it in transcendent terms. Which means you are experiencing it as the full-fledged son of mind, Manasaputra, the son of man, who is identical with the Son of God, the Brahma Putra. Because you are in the state of total realization. Therefore, there is no separation. And this is the full fruition of your humanness. You see, how many of us are really sensitive in depth to this fact? There is no intrusion of the past. Now consider, is the past therefore totally dead? Wholly dead? No, it isn't. The immediate now is the actual living transformed state of the total past. Now, those who believe in karma, as they say, and talk about karma and so forth, if they were to consider this very carefully and are able to go into deep meditation on this, they will begin to appreciate the meaning of the word karma. Its derivation from kri, to create. Creation knows no past or future. Creation is here now, just like that. And it is total. And this creation is an extraordinary pulse of life, a creative pulse, which is a vibrating in terms of life, other life, finite, infinite, being, or rather I should say, innumerable beings, one non-being. So now, total attentiveness in the immediate here now means that you are completely aware, not in analytical terms, but completely aware, you are at one with the totality of the past, which is embodied in the immediate living here now. This is the meaning, or rather, this is one meaning of the omniscience of God. It is said that the great teachers, like the Buddha or Jesus or whoever it was, were omniscient. And of course we all think of them as the most marvelous walking encyclopedias. Nothing of the sort. This is the sarvajna, the all-knowing state. This is the meaning of it. The manner in which you are aware, the manner in which you are conscious. So you see, in total attentiveness, there is absolutely no burden in terms of karma as misconceived by the hundreds of millions throughout the centuries. Because that which is creation has no ledger account, debits, credits, nothing of the sort. How can it? Consider this carefully, feel it. And see how your mind and your heart and your whole being is liberated. It's liberated because when you are aware of this creative activity, you are aware of the transforming process, you are free of any fear that you may have to bear this burden or pay that debt and so forth. You are free of any sort of exaltation that you have gained a wonderful reward for good deeds done in the past or some such nonsense. They are all burdens. People have not known the meaning of the word karma. But if at any time you really touch at its heart the experiencing of this total attentiveness, you find that suddenly the whole burden has completely dissolved. So that is one aspect, one sign rather, to suggest what is implied in total attentiveness. And remember, total attentiveness is a modern English phrase to suggest the meaning of that old word samadhi. If you like, another word, meditation. There are so many who rush here, rush there for meditation. You are fortunate people. We are all here, fortunate people, that we have an opportunity to penetrate into the depth of the meaning of meditation, of samadhi, of total attentiveness. It is not a thing of routine through which you acquire something beneficial, through which you attain a goal. All these are concepts which are the dead lumber of our mental constructs from the past handed on to us. Fossils. See what samadhi means. You'll appreciate why I prefer to translate particularly the Buddhist term samadhi, perfect samadhi, as perfect communion. Because communion can only be a living thing now. You cannot have communion with your great-great-grandfather or great-great-grandmother. Quite impossible. They are alive now, not as separate individuals. They are alive insofar as that which they were in the transforming process is transformed into something which you don't know, I don't know, and which cannot be thrown out of the cosmos. The here now is the totality, the absolute totality. The one total reality is right here now. And it is a matter of awakening to it, the supreme awakening. It's the Heart Sutra talked of. as gate, gate, para gate, para sangate, the supreme and total awakening. Bodhi swaha, oh, what an awakening. Do you think that's merely poetry? Of course it is poetry, but the poetry part is of little importance as compared with its transcendent significance and reality. There is another sign. In total attentiveness, there is no concern whatsoever, there cannot be, with what we commonly call the future. Total attentiveness functions as timelessness. There is no such thing as a future in relation to total attentiveness. And yet, here is the mystery, the marvel of it. The future, what we here and now call the future, is a potentiality which is contained in the living present, the immediate now. It is a potentiality. And that potentiality has the power of drawing out the immediate now in its transforming process to the next and the next and the next transformation. So you see how that which we call the future, the whole of the future, is embodied in the immediate now. What room is there for selfness? Has attainment, achievement, any meaning under those conditions? And consider again the wonderful liberation you and I experience, realize, make real for ourselves in consequence of all this. We live in terms of becoming this, becoming the other. I become a captain, I become a major, I become a colonel, I become a general, and then I take offense because I'm still called general and not field marshal, which I have just very recently become. So you see, the freedom from this becoming process is not that we get away from the world, far from it, samsara as we call it, the becoming process. In the world, in samsara, our mode of awareness has become so transformed that this bondage to time and space is gone as far as our awareness is concerned. And this again means that we are living religiously. The words of the Tejobindu Upanishad come to my mind. Shiva, the third person of the Trinity, answers the disciple, I am the I which has given up I. If I am the I which has given up I, Is there anything which I can become? Because becoming is a limited, petty little thing. It's a thing which lies in the palm of the Lord of Death. But this other is a transcendent reality, is the transcendent reality. One can't talk of a transcendent reality as if there were several transcendent realities. It is the transcendent reality. And if we are free from becoming, and this thirst for sentient existence and for growing and becoming and achieving and all the rest of it, if we are free of it all, what room is there for anxiety, for dejection, for sorrow? And all of these are personal things. There is that transcendent sorrow which is born of complete sympathy with the suffering of those who are still in the darkness. So you see, one gets freed of all wrong endeavor. We direct our endeavor selfishly to attain such and such an end. We do it every day of our lives. Let us have no illusions. We care for the self in the sense that we don't like the self to be hurt, to be annoyed, to be worried, to be frightened. Everything that we experience in everyday life is an object lesson for us. A wonderful object lesson, whether it the experience be something of an external nature or something which arises within our own minds and is of an internal nature. It's a wonderful object lesson for us, for the sake of self-knowledge, what we actually are. And when we really see that which we actually are, we are freed of the selfness, and in that moment the total attentiveness has actually functioned without our knowing it in the ordinary analytical way, that I am totally attentive. But it has actually happened. You see, total attentiveness is a natural thing, a living thing. Does the body, for example, which we just take for granted as we move about, does it know that, I, the body, am living? Does the heart know, I, the heart, am throbbing, pumping blood in the proper way, pressure so much, something else so much? And send the information back to NASA and get an order back from NASA for, alter pressure to this much or that. Not at all. It just happens naturally and perfectly. Meaning of nature. That way we understand. The meaning of nature is really also the meaning of the transcendent real, of God if you like, Brahman, say anything you like. They are an identical meaning. So we get free of self-concern. That which there is to do for us in the outer world, in our life, and that which there is to do in terms of our full humanness here and now, all that emerges naturally and sweetly if we are totally attentive to the immediate thing here now. Now consider, is this the same as concentrating your attention upon a particular something? In a sense it is, and in the larger and the complete sense it is not. The particular thing, person, experience, or state of mind, or whatever it is only the crystallizing point, the focus point for attention to function. But remember that the particular finite thing embodies the total universe in it. This is something which, of course, the ordinary sensible man of the world cannot possibly swallow, and quite naturally. But this is one of the great mysteries, that every single thing, every single person, whatever there is which is separate and particular in itself, an identity in itself, also embodies the total universe in it. And this you discover only when you are capable of total attentiveness. So, when you are totally attentive, living in the world, to what takes place in the world as a flow in time and space, you are simultaneously being totally attentive, transcendentally, to the one total reality. In other words, your attentiveness is identical with the divine omniscience. In a way, these are terrible things to say. Because remember, the great drawback of saying these things is just this. If what is said attracts and hypnotizes you, you are caught in a prison house of concepts and words which will be associated with the uprising of tremendous passion, desire for achievement for oneself. I want cosmic consciousness. Man, your head will break into 100,000 million fragments before you come anywhere near cosmic consciousness of that sort. But if you are wise and can just let this quietly take your being into itself, you will remain unshattered. Why do some people with quite remarkable vision, intellectual vision, go mad? Why are they shattered? Because simple purity to start with is not there. The impure is shattered. Those who meddle with yoga and all sorts of specialized systems of meditation, which are very, very dangerous, unless you are utterly pure to start with. See, a person is shattered in mind, and with it often in body. But if you let this take you into itself, don't strive to attain it. You never will get anywhere that way. Just bear in mind the significance and the implications of total attentiveness. And in seeing that, we see our own nothingness. When all our conceited, self-conceited evaluation of ourselves is reduced to absolute nothing, then our true worth is liberated into pure and natural functioning through our own psychophysical organism. Then you are a peacemaker. You have made your peace within yourself. Your whole being is at peace. It's harmonized. There isn't a shadow self at war with a divine self inside you. You are at peace. And you are at peace in harmonious relationship with the total reality. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they are children of God. Isn't that the beatitude? The children of God. The great teachers were not interested in nice poetic fancies. They spoke truth. So now, I hope that what we have considered this evening may be of some use in enabling us to begin to appreciate the tremendous nature of this thing which we call attentiveness, samadhi, meditation, communion.